Blog Talk Radio.
It's Wednesday, April 30th, 2014, and welcome to the first ever Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman, and I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Welcome aboard for the maiden voyage, partner.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be here for this new venture, and I look forward to working with you on this and having lots of fun with it along the way.
All right. Chet and I are also part of a weekly roundtable program at our sister station, Talk Sports Philly Radio. We actually did a show earlier today at our 12:30 slot. Chet, for those of you that for those out there that are new to us, tell them a little bit about your background.
All right, Bill. I'm originally from the Pennsylvania coal region, a little town of about 5,000 people called Mahanoy City up in Schuylkill County. I'm an alumnus of Penn State, and like you, Bill, a longtime, long-suffering Philadelphia sports fan. Most of my career has been in radio and related fields, most recently doing business news. I'm not sure how that happened. That was for Bloomberg Multimedia and the Wall Street Journal Radio Network. Prior to that, I worked at various radio stations around Pennsylvania and New Jersey doing news and sports, including WMAJ out in State College, the old big band version of WPEN in Philly, plus WPST and KYW, and I've also been writing articles and columns for TalkSportsPhilly.com since last September. I'm old enough to have seen Wilt play as a 76er, Dick Allen as a Philly, Timmy Brown as an Eagle, but still young enough, I hope, to realistically believe that maybe, just maybe, I'll witness an Eagles Super Bowl victory. So, yeah, despite having been alive for more than 4,000 of the Phillies' 10,000-plus losses, the Eagles' ongoing quest for that first-ever Super Bowl win, a lot of futility for the 76ers, and the Flyers' inability to get that third Stanley Cup, I remain a diehard fan who still loves to watch all of those teams and talk about them with other frustrated fans like you. So let's do it. Let's have some fun with it.
All right. And I guess for me, the same thing. I've been at this as a fan. I think my first game was in about 1964, and that is at least the first team that I remember as a young kid laying in bed listening on the radio as I was supposed to be asleep listening to Richie Allen, Johnny Callison, and those guys back in the day. So, you know, I've seen a lot. I used to go to Franklin Field back in the early days. I was actually there when they threw snowballs at Santa Claus, and was there when they flew the helicopter over Franklin Field with the Joe Must Go banner with Joe Kuharik back in the day. So seeing a whole lot of it, and, of course, with the Flyers from day one, been a fan all along, and have enjoyed that, and also got to see Wilt play myself. My first job ever was as an usher at the fabulous Palestra.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, all right. Tonight we have a special guest with us that I'll have to say is a guy, I couldn't think of a better word for him, so I'll call him a total sports junkie. I've been to a bunch of sporting events in my life around the country, but I can't touch this guy. Welcome, Kevin McClure.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Chet. How are you guys doing today? It's a pleasure to be here for the inaugural kickoff show here.
Thanks for joining
us. Okay. We're going to talk to Kevin about how he became a sports junkie, some of the events he's attended, his favorite individual performances, and favorite events he's attended, all the way up to last night's Rangers-Flyers game.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, I'm here. Are we on the air?
I can't hear Bill anymore.
Oh, must be those thunderstorms he was talking about.
Yep.
Oh, man. Bill, are you back with us?
Hey, do you have me?
Yep, we're back. We're still here.
I hear you, Bill.
Well, I don't know what happened there because I was hearing you guys loud and clear.
Okay. Yeah, you said there were thunderstorms your way, so.
Yes, there were. Yes, there were. Okay, let's get back where we were. I was wanting to hit up, let you guys know and let Chet know some of the events that Kevin has attended. We'll talk about these as we go along here, but this is just since Christmas. This is a four-month period. He saw a hockey game of the Nashville Predators, went and saw the Tennessee Titans. The next day saw the Music City Bowl. The next day saw Duke at Texas A&M and Johnny Manziel. That was in a four-day period, four events. Pretty good. Went on to see the Saints and the Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field. College basketball, Indiana at Penn State at the Bryce Jordan Center. For some reason, he must have got free tickets or something. The Golden State Warriors at the New York Knicks. I can't imagine why anybody would want to go see that. But then moves on to Raleigh to see the second and third rounds of the NCAA tournament, which included six games over a weekend. Got back home just about in time to go to opening day at Citizens Bank Park to see the Brewers and the Phillies, and then topped it off with the Frozen Four, seeing three games in 3 days there, and then last night at the Wells Fargo Center to see the Rangers and the Flyers. Kevin, that is some kind of busy sports.
Yeah, it's been a busy year. I've been fortunate that things fell into the schedule this year, and I was able to get out and go to quite a few things and have quite a few partners in crime that were willing to do a lot of that stuff, including my kids. I don't think you ever have to twist your kids' arms to do any of that kind of stuff.
That's right. So let me ask you, let's get this thing started here.
Okay.
How did this happen? How did you become a sports junkie? When did it start? Who's responsible? There's somebody got to be behind the scenes to put this craziness in your head.
Well, I think that I've been a sports fan pretty much like both of you guys all, my whole life, and I got to give full credit to that to my father, who was the same way. My dad was a really good basketball player in high school. He was a three-sport guy. You didn't go over to our house very often and not see sports on the TV. It didn't matter what it was, hockey, basketball, football, and baseball all the time. That was how he, spent his spare time. And, I wanted to be like him. He was an accountant. I eventually became one myself. So, if he did it, I was going to do it. And that's basically kind of, how this all started. And, he didn't do anything like I did there with the number of events, but, it was always a big deal when he would, I grew up in Harrisburg, and he would, at least a couple times a year, take us to Baltimore and Philadelphia to go see some events, which was always great.
Very good. Well, tell us about Penn State football. I know you've been attending games, I think, probably pretty close to 40 years, pretty much all along. And tell us a little bit about that, and how did this whole Joe Paterno situation affect you as a fan, and what's your quick thoughts on that?
Well, my first ever Penn State game is before they joined the Big Ten. I saw them in 1976. They played Iowa. It was 7-6, they lost that day, and but I fell in love with the school, the team, and everything about college football, really, that day. Pretty much every year since that time, I've been to at least one game a year. In 1992, we used to, in Harrisburg, a lot of tickets would pop open, so we were usually able to get almost any game we wanted. Well, in 92, Penn State, I don't know if you remember this, Bill, but they played Miami. Both teams are really good. Penn State was probably either number one or two in the country. They were ranked pretty high, and all the people that had tickets wouldn't give them to us that day or sell them to us. So we got mad at that point and said, why don't we just get season tickets? And we were season tickets holders when they joined the Big Ten in '93 up until You know, the last game of, you know, the Tom Bradley coached against Nebraska, that was the last time we had that. We dropped them after that game. Basically asking about, you know, how that all affected us. I think it was, you know, I still don't think they treated Joe Paterno properly. I mean, they've never honored him. They took the statue down. We were Joe guys. We think he's the school administration up there is, you know, it's just been awful. And I just have a real problem, you know, throwing money into that program right now, even though I know that it's, you know, small amount. I couldn't go the last couple years. I do like James Franklin. I think he's bringing in, you know, some good energy to the team and seems to be, you know, more closely associating himself with the history of Penn State than I'd say Bill O'Brien was. So I think that, you know, eventually I'll be able to get, hopefully get back to games there. But for at least the last 2 years, I have not gone.
Okay. Let's backtrack for just a second. You got to see Johnny Manziel live in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. He put on quite a show.
Oh, he was unbelievable that day. You know, it's just like when you saw that game, you looked at the receiver matchups that day, and there was probably not one corner on Duke that could really cover any of the A&M receivers. So you knew guys were going to be open, and if he could hit them, they'd be fine. But it didn't start out too good for them. They made a lot of mistakes early, got behind pretty far, and their defense couldn't stop Duke at all. So it got into one of those games where they had to score every time they had the ball, which I don't care who you're playing, it's not real easy. And Duke, you know, they had a very nice season, and they were a decent team. But, you know, when he got it cranked up there in the second, third quarter, they just couldn't stop him at all. And I'm just really impressed. He seems to be able to find the open guy, you know, on the run. When he starts running, he's hard to bring down. I think the players seemed to respond to him. He seemed to be a really good leader on the sidelines. He didn't, you know, you tried to watch him and see if I could see guys, yelling it back and forth and acting like he was kind of the big dog there. But it really didn't come across that way at all. I think the team that gets him is, if he goes to the right team, I think he could be, you know, a really good pro. You know, I just you worry a little bit because I think a lot of times in the, you know, when you go to the pros, it all depends on who drafts you. And it seems like the teams that are looking to pick at him are all teams with brand new coaches. So, that's always a big concern. If he would, you know, would you guys like to see him if Chip Kelly could have a hold of him? Or I'm not saying with the Eagles have a quarterback, but a coach like that, you know, put Manziel in with somebody like that, or Bill Belichick or something like that. You know, I think you would see somebody that can really play. You know, but if you put him in Cleveland, is he going to be able to do it? You know,
Do you see him as a first round draft pick?
Me, I don't necessarily know if he has the talent of a first round draft pick, but I just don't think enough teams will have the guts to pass on him in the first round. I think he's going to get taken relatively high. I think too many teams are out, you know, a lot of it's about image, and they're going to be afraid if this guy turns out good and they passed on him. You know, how does that look? I don't necessarily think the Texans are going to take him, but I'd be surprised if teams, you know, like the Vikings some of those other, like Jacksonville even. Are they going to pass on another quarterback when they don't have one, you know, and watch this guy get taken later in the draft, and if he has a good season, you know, you could be out of work. It's just
right.
It's a very –
definitely a crapshoot.
You know, it is. And I looked at the playoff quarterbacks this year, and, you know, 5 of the 12 guys were – not taken in the first round. So if you say, well, okay, he's a second-round player. Well, you know, Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick were taken in the second and third round. I think if you had those drafts over again, those guys probably wouldn't be taken that low. So, you know, some of these guys that have been really good that were can't miss like Brady Quinn, you know, I think those guys shouldn't have been taken that high. I think it's a crapshoot. I think if you need the guy at quarterback, you need a quarterback – and you're looking for one, I think he's one that could be taken. Now, if you think he could last till the second or third round, then I wouldn't take him. But I think I don't see that happening. You guys think he would last that long?
I think
Jeff,
he's a first
think?
Rounder.
Yeah,
I'll be shocked.
I do too.
Yeah, he'll be gone.
Yep, I think so too. I think somebody, you know, wants to make a splash. You know, he will sell tickets, and I also think, you know, it seems like he might have grown up some over the past year. I mean, last year all you heard was, you know, he's out and about and you know, getting in trouble. And this year I haven't heard much of any of that. So you're hoping that that's a good sign, or at least he's learned a way to, you know, curtail it a little bit and not get caught.
I want to ask you something. Moving on a little bit, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the Union College Frozen Four MVP Shane Gustavir. You see him getting into the Flyers quickly, an impact player. I mean, my concern with him is he's 5'11", 170-pound, 21-year-old defenseman. Boy, oh boy, yes. He better be able to skate like Bobby Orr.
Right. I thought the same thing. I took a look at all of the defensemen in the top eight. So the Eastern Conference playoff teams, I looked at the defensemen to see if I could find anybody under 6 foot and like 100. I think he weighs 170 pounds right now. And, you know, you go through it, and there's, let's face it, there's not many of them out there. But there is a guy on the Bruins. His name is Torrey Krug. This was probably his first full season with the Bruins. He's 5'9", 181 pounds. Like, you know, Gostisbehere, he was a Hobie Baker finalist a couple years ago. They had to send him to the AHL for a year. Got used to playing professional hockey. Came up in the playoffs last year against the Rangers in the second round. He didn't play in the first round when they had trouble against the Maple Leafs, but came in against the Rangers, scored, you know, four goals, I think, in that series. Was a, you know, just a key player. And you're like, who is this guy? You know, this year he comes back, Bruins full-time, 14 goals, 26 assists, 40 points and a plus 18. I think the Flyers would take that every day. I mean, that would probably be more goals than almost every defenseman they have. I think I looked it up, there might have been one guy more than that. But there's a guy, you know, 5'9", 181, making, you know, a major contribution. I can't say I'm an expert on their games or if they can compare, but the size piece, I think, is there. I do think they have to bulk them up. I mean, I can't see you getting beat on, like, a defense especially at 170 pounds getting beat on night after night. I just don't think you could take the punishment over an 82-game season. But
I can't see you clearing that crease out very well at 170 pounds with some of the size of some of these guys.
Right. He's going to have to put on at least 15 pounds, I would say. And I think you're going to have to play him, Bill, with like Krug plays with Dougie Hamilton, who's 6'5", 225 maybe even bigger than that. And that's the kind of guy you're going to have to put with Gostis. But you cannot put him out there with Mark Street, let's say, you know, and expect, you know, to not get – you're going to get killed. He's going to need one of the Flyers' bigger defensemen to play with him, you know, and then I think he can be very effective. From what I saw him at Union, I thought this guy, he was great on the power play and just keeping the puck, moving it around. And, you know, a lot of the coaches, his college coaches, love him. So they don't seem to be very, very worried about his height and think he could be a very good pro. So, you know,
the other thing I found interesting about him is that he's a Florida kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's from Pembroke Pines, Florida. Where do they come from?
Yeah. You know, and everything you've heard the kids say, like after the tournament, you know, it was, you know, all positive, all about the team and very little about him. So just seems like the perfect kind of kid you'd want, you know, coming up in your system. And,
Let's move on. I've got another question I wanted to ask you. And looking at your list and all the things we've talked about thus far, I have to ask you two questions. We can kind of tie them together. Of all the games that you've been to, what would you call the single best individual performance that you've seen, and also what is the best game you've seen?
I think we're going to go, you know, to Penn State with both of these. Unfortunately, I think the probably the best game I've ever saw was the 2005 Penn State Ohio State football game. It was Ohio State. They were the dominant team in the Big Ten. Penn State had really fallen on hard times. They had played well for a few years. Everybody, I mean, it was a road game for Ohio State. Most people, I think, thought they were going to win that game. Penn State made a couple big plays. They were in the game late. They had the lead late. And Troy Smith, who was, I think, either the Heisman Trophy winner the next year or that year or the year before, one of those years in there, started moving the ball. And you were worried that he was going to take him in and tie the game. And he got sacked at the 50-yard line, fumbled. Penn State recovered, and the game was over. And I've never heard a stadium as loud as that one. I think you were there that night.
And I will tell you, I was in that stadium as well for that game. And you're right. Yep. It was a tremendous atmosphere at Beaver Stadium.
Yep. The whole game, people just went nuts the whole game, and that play was just kind of the call. I get goosebumps even talking about it. It was a great night to be
and
up there.
How about individual performance?
Individual performance, I'd probably say, again, back to the Penn State thing with a couple individuals. Let me switch that up a little bit. My nephew, probably say in the early 90s, he was a big Wayne Gretzky fan. Never seen him play, never seen a pro hockey game. So I'm looking through the list, and I'm like, this would be a great birthday gift for him if I could take him to see a game. And I'm looking through, and the only one that could fit my schedule was a game at the Nassau Coliseum. So I said, okay, well, I'll get tickets to that. I can easily get tickets there. So I got his tickets. You go to the game, and you're not, really sure what you're going to see from a player like that. You know, you hope you catch a game where he does really well. Well, my nephew loved this guy, has the jersey on, because we go up there, he gets a hat trick. So, basically what you would expect, from a player like Wayne Gretzky, the greatest hockey player. It's either him or Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe, those three. But, to be able to, I know it wasn't a big game, but just the memory that he was able to do that, when we were there. I'd probably say Larry Johnson running for 279 yards to get 2,000 yards in the first half on, 15 carries or something like that. Will be up there as a dominating individual performance. And I'd probably also put the 1994 Penn State offense. I probably saw them play five times in person. And, I think they spoiled the next four or five fans for about 4 or 5 years. Every time that team got the ball, you thought it was a touchdown. I don't care if they had the ball at the one-yard line, it was third and 30. Somebody was going to make a play. You just had that, no one stopped them all year long. They got the ball, they scored a touchdown. The only defense that stopped them was the coach, who would call off the dogs when it got out of hand, or that team would have set, they'd have, and this is at the time when people still play defense too, so in college football. So I think, that team, I've never seen an offense quite like that, at least in person, over, a season like they were that particular year.
All right. Let's take a break here and say, want to let everyone know, all the listeners that know, that our Shop for Kisses phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. We do just have a couple house rules here. We ask that all the language be professional. All opinions are welcome, regardless of what they are, but please be respectful to other people's opinions. So hopefully we'll get some callers to talk with us as we move on. I have another question for you, Kevin, and I've been trying to avoid this. but, I've known you for a long time now, but it shows that you never know what's in somebody's closet. Is it true that you are a New York Rangers fan deep down? And if that is true, how did that happen? And hopefully by 10 o'clock tonight, you'll have seen the light and you'll be wearing orange and black.
That is true. Kind of goes back to, when we were watching hockey as a kid, I got Channel 9. I think it was at a time where, I just picked up the sport. Herb Brooks was coaching the Rangers at the time. And, I was coming right off the Olympics. And I became, he was my guy. I really wasn't a real big hockey fan until 19, that 1980 Olympic game is probably one that, you know, I'm one of those guys that would say Rudd made me a big fan of hockey. And he was the coach, so I went with him, and he left, and I stayed. So, but that's really kind of where it started, and the fact that I was able to see it, watch the games, which was all, and really listen to them on the radio as well. I think, you know, they were all, I could always pick up that, I remember walking around my house with the, you know, trying to get the signal. I had to find the perfect spot in the house where it would come in so I could hear the game. But that's, you know, kind of where all that started. I've had season tickets up there probably in the early 90s, 90, 91, 92, before I moved, you know, here to Chester County. And, you know, then I got Flyers tickets at that time. And where, as I really didn't like the Flyers at all, was when I was in Harrisburg. I thought, you know, when you have season tickets, it gets kind of, defeats the purpose if you're going to root against the team every night. So I, you know, I didn't, I wasn't kind of rooted for the Flyers since that point in time, unless they play the Rangers, which is what's happening right now.
We'll forgive you for that.
Well, we have a caller here. Let's see if we can get him on the line, see if he's got something for us. Go ahead. Who we have?
This is Frank.
Hey, Frank, go ahead. You've got Bill, Chet, and Kevin on Philly Press Box Radio.
Great, great. Good show. Really good show. Really good show. I really wanted to call in and just kind of surprise my buddy Kevin there. Good job, Kev.
Thank you.
Wanted to, you know, Kevin and I have, when I heard Kevin was going to be on here today, I actually thought it would be a great opportunity for me to speak on this, just for the simple matter that Kevin and I have been friends for about 21 years, and we travel together everywhere to see ball games. I can attest to one thing. When you talk about a sports junkie, I mean, I thought I was the ultimate, but when it comes to knowledge and it comes to facts and leverage and anything you want to talk about, Kevin is just second to none. As a matter of fact, he's so astute in so many areas. I've always said this to many. I've said it to him that there was a show on ESPN called Stump the Schwab. And I would guarantee you if I put him against that guy, he would have wiped him clean.
Thanks, Frank.
Hey, Kevin, let me ask you a question, man.
What's good about Kevin is anybody that knows me knows where I grew up. I grew up right behind the vet. I'm a diehard Eagles, Phillies, Flyers fan. Sixers, I really don't care for much, even though I had tickets for them. But I'm the type of fan that will tell you exactly the way it is. I won't sugarcoat anything. If they stink one night, I'll let you know. I'll rip them, whether it's on Facebook or whatever. Kevin and I, we'll be watching the same games at our homes, and we'll be texting each other back and forth or different games that are on. And he's always respectful of the fact that he knows I'm a Flyers fan, even though he's a stinking Rangers fan, which absolutely drives me nuts. But he respects that. We go to the games. He's a Ravens fan. We've been down to a Ravens game. We've gone to many Eagles games. And he just respects the fact that I love my Eagles and he loves the game, so we just continue to go together.
Well, Frank, we've got him out of the closet now. Philadelphia knows that he is a Rangers fan as of now.
Yeah. Kevin, I want to ask you something.
Frank, thanks for calling.
Great job,
thanks for calling, and we're going to move
Thank
on,
you.
All right? Appreciate it. Okay.
Kevin, could I ask you something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Kevin, when I saw the list of games that you've gone to in just the last few months, and when Bill told me all about you, I said, well, clearly the guy's not married. He can't be married. What is the story? Does your wife support you in going to all these ventures? Is she a sports fan herself, or does she just like having you out of the house? What's the deal?
probably all of the above. She's definitely supportive. Has always been that way, and you know, I'd probably say my wife hates sports, so she's not going to know. But she did go the day after I got married. We were out in San Diego. We couldn't check into a hotel, and she did go to a Chargers football game with me. So I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that through the years. But
she had to know what she was getting into.
I think so. I think, you know, and I think she's all, probably also came to the probably there's worse things to be out there than really into sports. So
That's right.
Definitely, you know, I think especially with, you know, with the kids, it's, you know, she knows they love it. And, you know, a lot of this stuff they've gone through with me this year, if you look at all the things down there, they probably, they did the bowl trip. I think the only thing I did without them that's on that list is, you know, that Eagles playoff game. Oh, they went to that, so they just didn't sit with me, but they went there. And then the was the tournament this year, and really because they had school, and I do that with my sister usually when I go. So, you know, it's a good chance to catch up with them. So, but that's kind of been able – that's been a big help that they've gone with me. Just makes it a little more expensive, that's all.
There you go. Okay, well, let's take a quick break before we get on to the Flyers-Rangers Game 7. So, hey, Chet, I have a question for you. Mother's Day is just around the corner. So how would you like to get cash back on all your online purchases through over 5,000 stores? And at the same time, each of your purchases benefits our friends at the Kisses for Kyle Foundation.
Well, I love the idea of getting cash back. Who wouldn't? And, Bill, it's especially appealing to me knowing that I'd be helping out Kisses for Kyle in the process. So how's it work?
Well, here's how you do it. Go to www.shopforkisses.org. Click on the register button on the top right corner to become a preferred customer, free of charge. Click on the All Stores tab if you already know where you want to shop and begin shopping. It's that easy. You'll receive cash back on your purchases to be used later, and KFK benefits as well. You can even comparison shop on the site, and they have the number one selling internet cosmetic line in the world called Motives. Check it out. It's a great way to make mom happy on Mother's Day, get a little money back, and help family.
Bill, are you there? I think we've lost Bill again, just as he was saying. He's telling you about shopforkisses.org, which he was telling you all about, and saying that if you have any questions, you can contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com. Again, that's bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com, or you can actually call Bob at 484-319-8043. And we're going to post Bob's contact information on our Facebook page. That's Philly Press Box Radio as well. So be sure to tell him that you heard about them from Philly Press Box Radio. Bill, are you back with us?
I don't think so.
Yep, I hear you.
Did you hear me?
You're there now. Yes, you are. I finished up the promo. Talking
I
all
heard,
about
I heard
Bob
you.
Sullivan.
You didn't hear me. I don't know what's going on in this lightning storm down here.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and talk about Game 7 for the Flyers at Madison Square Garden tonight. Starts, puck drops as soon as we're finished up here at 7 o'clock. Boy, what a Game 6 for the Flyers. What a Game 5 for the Rangers. Who knows what to expect in this game tonight? It's been – both teams have been pretty inconsistent so far, and I think it's really going to come down to Mason and Lundqvist. What do you guys think, Chet?
Well, nothing like a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I love it. And as we speak, as you said, we're about a half hour away from the puck dropping on this deciding game, the Flyers and Rangers opening round playoff series. It's been a pretty good back-and-forth battle that all comes down to this one game. First of all, let's give you a little history. The Flyers and Rangers in the playoffs, they've won, the Flyers have, 6 of the 10 playoff series against New York. That includes the last time that they met back in 1997. Of course, all the guys from that postseason meeting, Lindros, LeClaire, Brind'Amour, Desjardins, Gretzky, Messier, Leach, Richard, they're all gone now. The Flyers won that series 4-1, by the way. But the only other time they played a 7-game series against one another was the very first time they met in the postseason. That was way back in the 1974 playoff semifinals when the Orange and Black were on their way to their first Stanley Cup. And Bill and I remember it well. Bobby Clark, Bernie Parent and company beat the Rangers in the series, winning Game 7, by the way, by a 4-3 score. That was a series in which the home team won all 7 games. That's not happening this time around. Already the visitor has won 2 of the 6 games. We hope for a third time that happening tonight. And, of course, it was in the early part of that Game 7 40 years ago that Dave Schultz manhandled Rangers defenseman Dale Rolfe. leaving him battered and bloodied, and the Flyers ultimately held on for that one-goal victory and then beat the Bruins in the Cup Finals. The big question this time around going into the playoffs was the Flyers' goaltending. Steve Mason, though, is now back, and he's looked real good, I think, over the last three games. And I really hope that the momentum from last night carries over into tonight, because Mason was just spectacular last night. And the fact that they're playing just 24 hours later, I think, works in the Flyers' favor, because I think there's more of a chance of that momentum carrying over by the fact that they are playing just 24 hours after last night. Last night, Mason made several outstanding stops, including that second period glove save on Benoit Pouliot, and then one in the third period on a partial breakaway by Carl Hagelin. We know about the Rangers goalie, Lundqvist. He's got more experience in the postseason than Mason does, and of course he's got the home ice tonight. But I think the fact that Mason was out for those 2 weeks, that unplanned two-week rest that he got from the upper body injury in the next to the last game of the season against Pittsburgh, may actually be a blessing in disguise right here, right now. I think he's a little more rested, and he's just playing, hopefully, last night anyway, lights out. Hopefully he will do that again tonight. So, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a great game, I think, and I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that I've really noticed that stuck out for me is the Flyers' power play is starting to gel a little bit, and the Rangers' power play, they have not scored in 20 consecutive power plays since going back to Game 2. The Flyers have shut them down, knock on wood, that stays that way again tonight.
And the Flyers have six power play goals, I believe.
Yes, they do, and I really liked the last two or three games. I really liked the energy that came out of that Giroux line with Hartnell and Voracek, and I think Berube has done a real nice job of mixing those lines up and creating some different situations and energy for the Flyers. And Kevin, let's ask you from the Rangers side, as a Rangers fan, what do you see going into Game 7 besides boos coming from us here?
I think that the Rangers the special teams have really killed them in this series. They won Game 1, with the two power play goals, and they scored, I think, on their first power play in Game 2. I think that was the one that made it 2-0, I think, at the time. And really since that time, the Flyers have dominated the special teams play. And I don't know how the Rangers can win this game if they're minus one or two on special teams again. I just think they outplayed the Flyers pretty much even strength if you look at the numbers. But, and they've taken a lot of dumb penalties too. I mean, a lot of them, the penalties, the first penalty last night, was in the neutral zone. You just can't do that. There was a penalty. The first goal the Flyers scored, just an atrocious play. I don't know where Girardi was passing the puck. I mean, he just had no play when the whole side was open to clear it. I think the confidence in the penalty kill and the power play, both, is not high for the Rangers right now. So if they're in the box five times, I just can't see the Flyers not scoring at least one. For the Rangers to win, they're going to have to stay out of the box. I with you guys, I just like Chet said, I think, the fact that this game's the next night, I think the momentum can carry over. I think that if the Rangers fall behind 2-0, I think it would be very difficult, for them to get going.
You mentioned that first penalty, and to me, that first penalty in the game against the Rangers, to me, was just absolutely critical. Most important play of the game, regardless of the way it went further on. The Rangers were buzzing. The Flyers couldn't get the puck out of their zone. They were turning the puck over. Mason was coming up big. And then the Rangers got that penalty and turned it into a power play goal. And to me, the whole entire game swung Flyers' way, and the Rangers were on their heels the rest of the night.
Oh, yeah, and another thing about that power play goal that was so big is it was the first thing Wayne Simmonds had really done in the whole series. So, it obviously got him cranked up, and, he got off the schneid. So that's another problem that I think the Rangers have. Guys, Simmonds and Giroux have played well the last couple of days. I mean, they've gotten goals, they've gotten points. There's not a zero next to their name. I look at Rick Nash's name, there's still a zero there. He's pressing. The fans are, as much as Drew was getting here for the first four or five games. Nash is getting that tenfold right now for the Rangers. He's gone. He scored one playoff goal in 20 games. You know, that's just not.
He's getting
his
shots, though. He's got
do.
25 shots. He's just not getting it to go in the net.
Right. He's getting the shots. I think he's producing, but you know, he's making things happen out there, but it's not going in the net. And until he gets one in. And he's playing pretty good against the Flyers during the regular season. So it's just it's not going in for him right now, I think. And, you know, I think if he got off the schneid tonight, that would be a big plus for the Rangers, no question about it.
Very unusual, you know, that they're playing a back-to-back affair, games 6 and 7. I thought that was very unusual. I guess the NHL just, you know, had the next series starting on Friday, so they wanted to get this one over tonight. And they had the first few games spaced out, but now here we are in a back-to-back thing. So I thought, well, I'll check and see how the teams did in the second of back-to-back games during the season. And you can't really learn anything from that. The Rangers were 9-4 in the second night of back-to-back games during the regular season. The Flyers, though, almost exactly the same, 9-4-1. So neither team really has an advantage there. Of course, the Rangers do have home ice tonight. And, you know, maybe that puts a little more pressure on them. I don't know, because, you know, they are favored to win at home. So hopefully, for Bill and my sake anyway, hopefully the Rangers will be feeling some of that pressure.
Yeah, I think they're definitely they have to be feeling it. I mean, this is, I think, you know, after five games, most of their fans and people, media types, thought they had it. They were going to win. So if they would somehow lose it, I think it would be, you know, a step back based on what they've done the last couple of years. You know, it's not making progress as a team. They lost in the conference finals 2 years ago, the second round last year. It would be the first round this year. That's not going in the right direction.
They are 5-0 lifetime, though. 5-0 in Game 7 playoff battles at Madison Square Garden, so that is working in the Rangers' favor.
Yep.
One of the things I wanted to toss out to you guys that was brought up on the telecast last night was that, and it came from Craig Berube, that he was disappointed in the Flyers, but even the Rangers about the lack of intensity in this series, and neither team was playing with playoff intensity. And I just really surprised me of how you could be in the first round of the playoffs and playing pretty much an arch rival. And we saw it as fans, I think, and recognized it, but even the coaches recognizing they're not playing playoff intensity hockey.
I completely agree with you, Bill. It's Flyers Rangers. We're getting a game 7. We've had a pretty even series. I wouldn't call it a good series. Is there a game that you can hang your hat on? That, you know, both teams brought their A game, played. And we're going to see who wins. I don't think in the three Flyers wins, the Rangers haven't played well, and the three Ranger wins, the Flyers really haven't played that well. You haven't seen the two teams both play good at the same time, like. No overtime games. When this matchup came up, I thought these teams were so even, and I think they are, but we're not getting we don't have any overtime games. We haven't I don't know if we've even had a tie game with 10 minutes to go in the game. So it really hasn't had a lot of juice, I would say, for the guy watching in, you know, Seattle, Washington.
Right. Chet, what else you like to add? I know you're fired up. You're ready to go here on Game 7. You've had your Flyers gear on since you woke up this morning.
I have, in fact. I'm wearing a black Flyers T-shirt with the orange Philadelphia Flyers print on the front. And so, yeah, I'm ready to go. Yeah, but I agree with you guys. It does not have the same kind of atmosphere as the Flyers-Penguins series of 2 years ago. There's just not that intensity, but hopefully we're going to see that tonight. I saw Al Morganti's predicted an overtime game tonight. I'll tell you who does want to see a long game tonight. That would be the Pittsburgh Penguins because, of course, the winner of this series gets to play the Penguins starting this Friday in Pittsburgh. So I'm sure those guys would love to see a triple overtime game tonight.
Do you think the Penguins really want to play the Flyers?
No, I don't. Flyers have really had their number, especially in Pittsburgh, over the last couple of years. So, I got to think if the Penguins were pressed, they would say they're rooting more for the Rangers.
I totally agree. They own the Rangers. And the playoffs, they've owned them. They've owned them during the regular season. I think the Flyers, they probably want no parts of.
So the only thing I'm going to say, I'm not going to make
like,
a... I'm not going to make a prediction tonight other than I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, maybe a 2-1 final, something like that. And I wouldn't mind seeing an overtime game, but not a triple overtime game. I'm too old to stay up that late anymore.
I'm going 3-1 Flyers. 2-1 with a score with an empty netter. Make it 3-1
okay.
Flyers tonight.
I bet you Kevin picked something else.
But I'm going to say it's 3-2 Rangers.
Okay.
And they're going to have to hang on to win it. But I think we're going to get
right,
a game that
right.
we look for.
Looking okay. forward
well,
to it.
Tell you what, let's move on real quick. Let's hit one more topic before we get to the closer. Let's talk a little Phillies. You know, they just came back from a West Coast trip where they actually played pretty well and brought Cole Hamels to the mound last night against the Mets, or the Mets, and he did not fare very well. What's your take on the Phillies at this point, Chet, playing 500 ball?
Well, pretty much about as expected, to be honest. We're a month in. Really, I'm still not sure what to make of the 2014 Phillies and what their prospects are. I mean, curiously, they've been better on the road than at home. They're 9-7 on the road. At home, they're just 4-6. They did play reasonably well last week on that road trip, taking 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers and 2 out of 3 in Arizona, with, yes, Jonathan Papelbon saving both of those wins in Arizona, the guy that I wanted to run out of town 2 or 3 weeks ago. He has made me shut my mouth lately because he's been doing a pretty good job. He has, what, 7 or 8 saves already? They got some timely hitting as well. Then, yeah, they come home last night, lose that ugly game to the Mets 6-1. Cole Hamels having just an embarrassing, and that's his word, outing. 4 walks in the third inning. He was gone after 4 2/3 innings, giving up 6 earned runs. I'm going to give him something of a mulligan on this one, though, because it was a miserable, chilly, rainy night, and hopefully he'll do better in his next start. He's got to, because, I mean, the Phillies have that trio of pitchers at the top in him, Lee, and Burnett that could keep them in contention all year if they do what they're supposed to do. I mean, Burnett has looked great, especially since coming down with the hernia problem. He's looked really, really sharp. Cliff Lee did not do well the last time out, although the team did save him and they got a win. But yeah, I think Lee's going to have a fine year. So 13-13 overall, pretty much about what I expected. I expect him to be 500 or a little under for the season. So for now they're in the race, but they're going to have to get consistent pitching. The bullpen's got to do better. The biggest disappointment for me has been Jake Diekman, the guy that I thought was going to turn into a real star this year. He has actually struggled in at least half of his chances. So Diekman's got to turn it around for the Phillies to contend, in my opinion.
Kev, what do you think at this point?
I think at the very least, I'm actually a little surprised that they played as well as they did. When they went to Colorado, they lost the first two games. They played that game on Easter Sunday against the Rockies. It looked like they were kind of teetering a little bit. And I was thinking that, you know, with the Dodgers coming up, this could be a real rough trip. But they came back, won that game, and then really only lost two more times on that trip. I think that playing 500 near the beginning of the season keeps you, you know, right in contention, where if you get that little spurt, you know, you're right in it. So I think that that's, if you look at it, you know, I'm a little concerned about the division because I think the Nationals are going to play a little better than what they have right now. You know, the Mets all of a sudden have gotten off to a similar start to the Phillies that is probably a little bit better than what people thought. And, you know, so it looks like the division is going to be tough, and I don't know how the Braves do it with all the pitching injuries they have. It's unbelievable that they've been able to keep things going. But, you know, yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, that top three at the top of the rotation, all those things, if you get Hamels going again, and the fact that he was hurt and they still have this record is also, I think, a positive for the Phillies. But if those three could get going and somebody goes with them, you know, you might have something here that could, you know, sneak into that, be in that race for that last wild card in September. I just don't see them competing for a division. I think you need 90-plus wins to get that. I'm not sure they're able to get that this year.
Yeah, plus they've got to keep all the big guys healthy. I mean, you know, Utley's off to a great start, but I'm just always scared that he's not going to make it through the season. He did it last year, but I don't know. I hope his knees and everything else on his 35-year-old body holds up. Jimmy Rollins, of course, not a kid. Ryan Howard, we know about his injury problems the last 2 years. Ryan Howard does have a little bit of his power back, it seems, with 5 home runs so far. Still strikes out too much, I think. But Marlon Byrd has been a good addition. So I think these guys can hit. They just got to stay healthy and get the pitching. And, you know, they could hang in there and contend. But, frankly, I'll be surprised if they're still in it in August. But, again, I hope I'm wrong.
You know, a couple things I want to throw out about this. You know, they're 13-13 overall, but they're only 4-6 at home and 9-7 on the road. In the month of May, they have 19 home games and 8 road games. So they need to turn that around. And, you know, we're going to know a lot about where this team's going to be come June the 1st. If they can't handle this home, you know, the home games and say win, I don't know, 8 out of 19 or something like that, obviously they're in big trouble. But a couple things that I wanted to point out. First, Chet, you know, you and I have talked about Jake Diekman before, and I like him as well. And the other one I like is Cody Ashe, who's really struggling hitting 200. But that third base is a mess down there. Ashe at 200, Nix at 161, and Galvis at 033. However, you can hit in the big leagues and hit over 33. That's pretty
amazing.
Yeah,
1 for 30. Freddie is 1 for 30.
1 for 30, 1 run scored, and 9 strikeouts. That's
that's
not
amazing.
Going to get only 2 walks, so he's not even walking his way onto base. But, you know, another thing about this team, and we've talked about this from the beginning, if, you know, they're older, and if they start getting banged up, and Ryan Sandberg's been giving a lot of guys days off and trying to plug people in, but if you take the bench of Nieves, Gwynn, Mayberry, Nix, and Galvis, and add them all up, they are 23 of 134, hitting a massive 172 as a bench.
That is not a good bench.
You're not going to survive trying to take Utley, you know, at 355 and some of these guys out of the lineup. They got to have the rest, but you got to be able to replace them, and that's not good. And one other comment I wanted to make, because I've been high on Ben Revere, and I think Ben Revere is a future all-star for the Phillies. And, you know, he started out a little slow, but he's up to 299. He's already got 10 stolen bases. I think he's a guy that you're going to see in the Midsummer Classic in July.
Wow. I don't know if I agree with that. I like Ben Revere. I like the way he hustles. I like the way he runs, of course. The guy can steal bases. But I want to see him get more doubles. I mean, yeah, he's hitting 299, but he's only got – well, he is – no doubles? Can that be right? He has 1 triple and no doubles? I mean, that's just hard to believe. He's getting on base with 29 hits and 97 at-bats, but he's got to get some gappers in there because he can turn some of those doubles into triples. But, you know, hopefully he will pick it up. I like the guy's enthusiasm. He doesn't have a great arm, but he can certainly cover a lot of ground out in center field. I don't know if I agree about the future All-Star thing, but I do like the way he plays, and I like the fact that he can get on base with singles. I just want to see some more extra base hits.
Well, you single and steal. Doesn't that count as a double?
Yeah, I guess so. Sure. You've got 10 steals. And Bill's line crapped out on us again.
Did it? Okay.
Hey, Kevin, you and I were at one game at least together. That was the 1993 NLCS win when the Phillies beat the Braves in Game 6.
Yes.
And I see that was high on your list also, one of your favorite games. I remember that one well. I was out in left center field and just having a blast watching the Phillies win and then the big celebration right afterwards.
Yeah, that was such a great series because the Braves had all that pitching. They were really the heavy favorite that year, and to see the Phillies – you know, really just out-tough them in that series. You know, that was such a tough group that, you know, they never quit. And they always kept battling. And you know, they were just every out, it seemed like, in that lineup for the Phillies was tough that year. You know?
Yeah, I had a 16-game plan that year, so I got to a lot of games and a couple of the playoff games. And unfortunately, I only saw one series game, and it was one of the ones they lost. And, of course, they ended up losing to the Blue Jays that year. But, yeah, certainly a year to remember, and that game in particular was one to remember.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Chet, you got me back?
Yeah, we hear you again, Bill.
Okay.
I covered for you. Don't worry.
Thanks. Oh, I appreciate it. Got my back. Hey, what I did want to start to say is I wanted to toss out, since I've been a backer while everybody else was a basher, you mentioned about Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah.
He's been lights out. You know, other
he really
than
has.
That early game against the Rangers, and, you know, we've talked about whether he's a nutcase and we should like him or not, but you know what? Guy gets guys out, and that's what he's paid to do.
Yep, he's done a great job.
Yeah. I'm surprised, I got to be honest. I mean, he's got his ERA down to 2.38 despite that one horrible outing. So I'm sorry, Jonathan. Please forgive me.
Well, knock on wood, he has given up no runs in any game except that game.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of those games,
yeah.
Bill, he really hasn't. There hasn't been much drama. You might, I can't say, I'm not going to say I've seen them all, but I know in quite a few of those it's been a very efficient ninth inning. He hasn't put a million guys on base. He's not, like, you know, you always fear that closer that puts two, three guys on every night, like Mitch Williams. You know that eventually
that's
going to catch up to you.
That's right. Papelbon's
not doing that right now.
Yep. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour, so we probably need to bring this thing to a close. But I did want to tell you about next week's show because I am really excited about it. We'll be spending the entire hour talking Eagles and the Eagles draft that begins the following day. We'll be back on our 7 o'clock time frame unless the Flyers are playing, and we'll adjust again. But we're going to shoot for 7 o'clock next week. We're excited that we're going to have a local draft guru named Fran Duffy with us. Fran works for the Eagles. He's in the video department there, and he's a producer, has done a lot of things that our listeners have probably seen on Action News. He does a show there and also on the Eagles website, so he'll give us a lot of insight on that. And he has also evaluated over 350 players in this draft. And Fran's passion is the draft. So we'll get a look at his first-round big board. He doesn't have insider information or anything like that, but he knows who can play and who can't, and he'll give us his insights on who the Eagles will take and the and his first-round big board. So it's going to be an awful lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. So I would like to take time to thank our special guest, the sports junkie, Kevin McClure, Mary Flanagan, our marketer extraordinaire behind the scenes, and my partner, Jim Chetchesco, as well as our sponsor, shopforkisses.org. This is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show. We'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, May 7th at 7 p.m. to talk Eagles. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And high hopes, Philadelphia sports fans, let's go Flyers!